Catholic Schoolhouse, a podcast of the DePores Pages podcasts on Catholic education and Catholic practice and spirituality. You can subscribe to this podcast at thefriar.org. That's thefriar.org. Or you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Hello and welcome to this edition of the Catholic Schoolhouse. This is still the month of February, and if you remember on the last episode, I said we were going to be celebrating Black History Month by highlighting some really wonderful Black Catholics. And so today we are looking at Sister Josephine Paquita, who was a very courageous and tremendous, tremendous holy saint. And we're going to learn about her life and see just how tremendous she was. Now, she's born in 1869, around that time. She's not really sure when she was born or exactly how old she was, but she was born into a somewhat prosperous family because her father was the brother of the village chief. She says that she lived a very happy and carefree life. She didn't really know what suffering was, and so it's a beautiful beginning of her life, but that's going to come to an end in a hurry because when she's around 7 or 8 years old, she's seized by Arab slave traders. And in this slavery, she's forced to walk barefoot for about 600 miles and then ultimately is sold and bought twice, well, before she even gets to the final destination where she will be sold. And then over the next 12 years, she was sold 3 more times and then given away. Now, Paquita is not her birth name. She didn't remember her name when she was taken because she was so terrified being abducted to become a slave. She forgot her own name. And so the slave traders actually gave her the name Paquita, which in Arabic means the lucky one or the fortunate one. We're going to see that there was nothing much that appears lucky or fortunate during the time she was a slave. She was also during this time forced to convert to Islam. So she has some religion, but it's a forcible conversion. And as we're going to see, it's a different experience than she has when she ultimately becomes a Catholic. So she's bought by a wealthy, rich Arab. And at first things are going relatively well, but then there's a problem with the son of one of the owners. And that causes her to get beaten so severely that she has to spend at least a month in bed because she's recovering. She's so badly, badly treated. And she says that there isn't a day where she doesn't have some wound or another from being whipped, from being punished, from being hurt. One thing in particular that was most brutal to her is a process that can be likened to what's called scarification. So what that means is her mistress would stand there with a whip in her hand, and a woman would come in with white flour, salt, and a razor. And what would happen is the flour would be used to draw patterns on the skin of Paquita, and then there would be, the woman would cut deeply with the razor along the lines. And then those wounds would be filled with salt so that the scarring would then become permanent. And it was very, very painful. There are 114 intricate patterns that wind up being cut into various parts along her body. Now, what happens is there are some revolutionaries that begin to attack in Sudan. And so in 1883, Paquita is under the control of the Italian vice consul, a man named Callisto Lagnani, who actually treats her very, very well and doesn't beat her, doesn't punish her. And when he does return to Italy, Paquita begs to go with him. So in 1884, they escape with a friend, one of the Lagnani's friends, a man named Augusto Michieli. They travel on camel some 400 miles to get to where they can actually then go to Italy, and they arrive there. Now, when they get there, Callisto Lagnani, the Italian vice consul, gives ownership of Paquita to the wife of Augusto Michieli. His wife was named Torina, and they take her to their family, and she lives there for 3 years. She's essentially the nanny to Machielli's daughter, Alice. Now, what happens is that after this, Machielli gets a very large parcel of land on the Red Sea and wants to go back to Sudan. He wants his family to go there. He wants to sell all the property he has in Italy and move back to Sudan. Now, what happens is that this sale takes a long time, and so she wants her husband, this Tarina Makiali, in Sudan, even though land transactions weren't finished. So she wants to be in Sudan. But the villa is already sold, and Keita and the daughter of Tarina need a temporary place to stay. And so Tarina goes to Sudan, and Bakita and Tarina's daughter Mamina wind up being in Italy. They're staying with the Canossian sisters in Venice, which is a very important thing to be aware of because, as we're going to see, it's a really important part of the chapter. And she is really introduced at that time for the first time to Christianity and sees just how wonderful it is. She says something very, very beautiful about this. She says this: "These holy mothers instructed me with heroic patience and introduced me to that God who from childhood I had felt in my heart without knowing who he was." Just think of the beauty of that moment, that she had felt the presence of God even though she didn't know that it was God. Isn't that beautiful? That the love of God was so powerful that she felt it in her heart even though she didn't know who God was. So she's ultimately winds up in this community. She finds herself ultimately in the convent. They want to go back to Sudan. So Mrs. Makiali wants to go back there. She comes to Italy to take Bakita back, but ultimately Bakita refuses. And what happens is that Cardinal of Venice is contacted. And what happens is an Italian court rules that because the British had induced Sudan to outlaw slavery before Bakita's birth, and because Italy doesn't recognize slavery, Bakita had never legally been a slave. And so for the first time in her life, she's free, and she chooses to remain with these sisters who have provided such tremendous care. And so she's baptized in 1890. She receives Holy Communion from Cardinal Sarto, who would become Pope Pius X. And so it's a very beautiful, beautiful story here. She enters ultimately the novitiate shortly thereafter and takes vows to be a Canossian sister. Now, what happens in the midst of this is really, really beautiful because she spends most of her time in Italy, and her role in much of this time is to help the new sisters who will be going to Africa to understand what that would be like. And so she did a lot of things, many, many things. But what was noticed was her gentleness, her calming voice, and her ever-present smile. And so she becomes very well known for this. She has a special charisma, and her reputation for holiness becomes noticed by her order very early on. In 1931, they actually published for the first time her story, and that makes her famous throughout Italy. And during the Second World War, I think her experiences of tremendous suffering and not being free helped her to be the person that could represent the fears and hopes of the town people. They felt that she was a saint, and they felt that she would protect them. And so she became recognized as this great, great woman of holiness. She found a lot of suffering and pain in her life, especially her final years. She used a wheelchair, but she always remained cheerful and happy. And she would always say, "as the Master desires," referring, of course, to Christ. And so it was really wonderful. And her dedication to Mary, the Mother of God, was really the last thing for which she was known. She was canonized in the year 2000. Now, as I mentioned, Pope Benedict, in his encyclical, Spe Salvi, on hope, used her story as a way to understand that transformation is possible through suffering. I mean, think of her story. She has kind of a good life at the beginning, then she's a slave and treated horribly with lots of suffering. She's beaten. There's all these really awful things that occur to her. But then ultimately, she finds this great, great moment. And Pope Benedict used her as an example to say, what does hope consist, which as hope is redemption? And it's to come to know God. And that was the real moment. Remember when she's introduced to Christ, when she's introduced by the sisters to this great person of Jesus, she recognizes that she can name this presence of God that she's known since she was little. and it was just beautiful. So we all, I think, have moments where we suffer. We all have moments where we are difficult. We find ourselves in difficulty, rather, or that things are hard. And so perhaps you could look at the example of St. Josephine Vaquita, who was a woman who suffered greatly, but always remembered the power of God, and it is an example of tremendous hope that we can all face because God loves us so much.